I remember when the whole team building thing was a super trend, and every company says, "Oh, if you work really hard, then we can pay for a nice trip to
Wow.
Thailand."
What company is that? I want to go.
I'll tell you. I'll text you after the show. But
Oh, your staff is burnt out? Make them take a training. That doesn't make any sense. But if you're but if your staff, if specific parts of your staff are burnt out, maybe they're doing more and other people are doing less, and some of those tasks could be redistributed to other people.
Welcome to The Bridge. Fun conversations on culture, life, and everything in between.
Find us where you get your podcasts. If you like the show, then consider pushing the like button or giving us 5 stars. Suggestions, comments, anything you would like to share, email us at welovethebridge@gmail.com. We love The Bridge. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Welcome to The Bridge. Globally, we are mostly back at the office, and a familiar workplace woe is also returning. Burnout. According to the BBC in January of 2024, quote, "Burnout is at the sharp end of the spectrum. It's a very serious condition," end quote. I'm going to say that to my boss in the future. We know the feeling. How do you get there? How do we avoid it? And what can we do when it happens to us? What are your thoughts, Alex?
Hey, boss, listen to this. Let me know. We are all holding up, I think, in whatever way we can. But it is a very serious problem, and it causes career decisions like the ones that I have made in the past year. So a very serious issue, Jason.
Mm. Well, could you give me one example of this? Because that was like a huge open, and then there's, okay, and that's it.
No follow up. Yeah. No, I think I quite literally left my full-time day job because of the burnout, both physically and mentally, and, you know, looking at the future and the prospects of this job. And that all led to my decision of leaving a very big company, leaving behind my steady paycheck and a very, you know, kind of a, it is a little bit of a vanity thing when you tell people that you work at this company. It is great. But after all, I thought to myself, how long can I hold on like this? And the answer is very short. So let's go for something different and let's try to be a little bit happier in life.
Wow. Are you just doing tons of side gigs, or do you have another full time?
I don't have full time. I started my own company.
Wow.
Yeah, I am doing all kinds of things right now, but I want to, every time I talk to people, I'm like, oh no, I'm not freelancing. And people would come to me for gigs and, you know, old jobs that I used to take. But I would tell people that I'm not trying to just find money here and there. I'm trying to focus on what I can build.
So you opened a construction company then?
who's the comedian here? I think someone wants to go for an open mic and start his comedy career.
No, definitely,
huh?
Definitely not. No, there's no way. I do like side. I have a lot of side gigs. We're going to be talking about burnout. So I am like you. I'm prolific and I do lots of things, but comedy is not going to be one of those things, Alex.
Never say never, no, Jason.
I just think that I can be funny, you know, in a dad way, you know, like dad jokes, you know, like kind of jokes. But I don't think I'm standing on the stage funny. All right. So, you know, it's really important to achieve work-life balance. For some people, they're on either side of the spectrum and some people are in the middle. So you have people who show up to work and barely do anything. I know these people. I've seen them napping at their
desks.
I
have a lot of rants about these people as well.
they come in late. They leave early. Their lunch is 3 hours long or whatever. And, you know, I can't respect that. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But, you know, I also at the other end of this, you know, people work so hard that they're like frying. I see people like having meltdowns. I had a meltdown last year too, Alex. But you
what
know,
happened?
Well, I would like to put it into my own context. It's not so much what happened as I am not one of those people who tends to rest when they need rest. I tend to work too hard for months into my burnout, so that my burnout just gets worse and worse and worse and snowballs into a...
That doesn't sound very healthy.
Yeah. So last year I was like finishing a book and I was like working 7 days a week and, you know, really taking on all kinds of new skills that I'd never learned before. And
Yeah.
And then I was just like, I can't do this anymore. And there was probably a month adjustment period where I just refused to do anything outside of work at all whatsoever. It was just like, okay, yeah. I'm watching Star Trek right now.
And how did that feel? Did it help? And then I think the more important question is after you take that break, does it help to go back into the same kind of intensity of work, of burnout style work?
Well, the thing is, I switched careers into media from education, and that was a massive change for me. So that at that point, I was taking on tons of new skills all the time, learning how to do, you know, use a green screen and all this stuff. And
nice.
Now I have adapted, so I can go back to having all these side gigs, and it's not as stressful so far. It feels like that because I don't have to constantly be reinvent the wheel over and over and over again. Mm. I've kind of got some things, you know, in my toolkit. So
yeah, so it sounds like for you it's more of adding to your repertoire of things that you can and want to do that eventually help you realize your personal value, it seems like. Because I remember, I think we've talked about the similar topics long time ago, and I don't know if you remember this reference that I brought up. It was a video that I saw. It was a person with two fish tanks, smaller fish tanks. One fish tank has very clear water, the other one has very, very dirty water. Then in the clear water there's a very happy little fish. In the dirty water, there's a fish that looks like the fish is going to die. And the person fishes the fish out from the dirty water and puts the fish into the clear water. And the fish immediately becomes a lot more lively, a lot more happy. And he's swimming around in the, or she, I don't, we couldn't know, and in the clear water for a little bit. And then he gets the fish out from the clear water, puts the fish back into dirty water, and the fish goes back into, you know, the dying status. And then at the end of the video, the prompts on the screen was, so you think taking a break from your toxic work environment is going to help? Think again.
That's a really good point. Yeah. Mm. I have a friend named Simon. This is a meme now that's really popular. When he posted this like 10 years ago, it was the first time I'd seen the idea. He posted this meme and it was a picture of a little cabin next to a beach. And it said, don't take a vacation from your life. Create a life you don't need to take a vacation from. So I thought, you know, I think that's a good way of thinking about it too.
Yeah, for sure. We would all love that. But the question is how or whether we can.
Right. So I have this article here, and this is from the BBC, Extreme Exhaustion and Burnout, How It Happens and What to Do About It. And I thought we could talk about a little bit about that. And so it talks about, you know, excessive workloads. Obviously, that's the first thing that people think of. But some of the other things that I think a lot of managers would be surprised by in different fields, you know, insufficient autonomy. I think this is a really critical one to digest because a lot of managers approach their leadership roles in a very micromanaging way. And that tends to destroy the, you know, emotional integrity of their direct reports. And so that can lead to burnout because instead of being able to creatively solve something, they're always worried, is this going to be what my manager wants? And then they, you know, question themselves and redo it or don't know how to be creative because they're scared if they do it. So the micromanaging is definitely a way that destroys, you know, and burns people out. It destroys, you know, employee morale and burns people out really quickly.
For sure. I think one thing that I was very happy with my old job was that my manager, A, she didn't like to micromanage. Second, she is not in China. So there's no micromanaging. That is too impossible. And it did feel really good.
Oh, yeah. You're listening to The Bridge.
Well, you know, another one here on this list says inadequate rewards. And I'm a little confused about this one because I've always heard differing things. Some people say monetary rewards. Other people say like public praise. And then there are certain personality types that don't like public praise. They like to be praised like one-on-one or like. So I don't know when it says rewards, what rewards are, what, you know, you kind of had a HR related role. What do you think, what is a good way to reward an employee, Alex? Help me out here.
I don't know who's coming up with this, but in my old company, and I think in a lot of other companies, you can't just give people praise or give them kind of an award saying they're the best employee of the season and with no monetary rewards. So it's always, that kind of praise also always comes with a little bit of, you know, cash.
Like a bonus.
It's not big, but it is something, you know, for people to think, okay, this is not just an empty check, because you can give people, you know, verbal praises all the time, or just say they're the best. Oh, you're my favorite. Imagine you're having the one-on-one with your manager and everyone goes in and the manager just goes, oh, you're the best employee on our team. Like, mm-hmm. we can't live without this team, can't function without you. So the HR system always encourages middle management to come up with incentives mm-hmm. that combines the kind of the public recognition and also some sort of monetary, let's say, encouragement. But I think for people who could risk the burnout to do as much as they can, it's always the year-end bonus that mm-hmm. that's what they have in sight. So basically you need to know, for example, in the tech world, product managers are always putting in 300% of their efforts into their job. And a lot of people do this because, well, A, they believe in the product they're making, but B, they could really get a huge bonus if the product really takes off and makes a huge difference in the social media world.
Yeah.
So they go all out. And at that point, you know, the kind of the verbal praises or the verbal recognition almost comes from them. Like they're going to go tell people, oh, my team developed this product. But then what makes them so proud about it is how other people, the exposure of the product they make and the monetary bonus that they can get. At least that's what I think. Mm.
I remember we did an episode last year where we looked at the fact that people were no longer looking for, you know, like new skills training, all these like excuses for not giving people monetary rewards last year. And that people, in fact, are turning towards, yeah, you better pay me. Like basically,
yeah.
Like, so the, you know, there's an old adage, and this came from Harvard Managed Mentor and, you know, all Harvard Business School and all this big institutions for a lot of time, a couple decades leading up until 2018 or so, where there was like, oh, you can reward your employees in all these other creative ways. But that is kind of dead. And instead people, especially young people, want money and they want opportunities to move up in the company, which also means more money.
Yeah. I remember when the whole team building thing was a super trend and every company says, oh, if you work really hard, then we can pay for a nice trip to Thailand.
Wow. What company is that? I want to go.
I'll tell you. I'll text you after the show. But they're still doing that. The company is really, they put on a huge extravaganza for their employees and they take the employees to Thailand and it's like a 7-day trip. And
great, everything, 7 days with my boss.
Everything's Exactly. Nobody wants to do that anymore. I even dreaded just spending a full day with my team back when I was at the company. Not because my team were, you know, the people on my team were horrible people. It's just like, we are here because we all do this job. It doesn't mean that we like to do or enjoy the same things when we're not working. And when I'm not working, the way you reward me for working harder or doing well at my job is to do more things that I don't like to do on my own. Like, I will pass. Like, even if you say, let's go to Paris. And if it's with my coworkers, I'm like,
Alex,
you know what? Can you just cash me? Can you just give me the cash?
I think you need to think about that. You know what? I would say, you know, in China, one thing that they like to do as companies is take the entire team, right, to somewhere local where they go and like play laser tag, I don't know, or go boating or something like that.
Ugh,
and then they come, then they go to Chuar or like hot pot together. And while I'm not a big fan of doing that, because it's company time, I don't mind usually. But the secondary thing is I do like to have more time with coworkers who I ordinarily wouldn't talk about, which brings us to our next one, breakdown of community. I think in the workplace, especially in, you know, big companies, sometimes the concept of either one-on-ones with your coworkers, with your team members, with your leadership, with your direct reports, or time with coworkers you ordinarily don't spend time with is very valuable. And, you know, in order to, you know, I see people in my office all the time and I don't know them. I don't even know most of their names. Half of the people in the room with me, I don't know their name at all.
I know.
But we smile at each other in the elevator and stuff. But I would love to have a conversation for 10 minutes with them to know who is this person? What are they doing? All that kind of thing. And you can't just walk over to someone randomly and just be like, tell me about yourself, because that's weird. You know, people are going to think, what is wrong with this person? So if the company could facilitate those kinds of engagements, I think it could lead to a better community in the office.
I think it's such a valid point. I'm going to dive back into my, it's not my nightmare, but it is something that I struggled with when I was working at the big tech company before. And I have the two sides of what we're just discussing and how it really, really helps when you have the sense of community, and how it really doesn't help when you don't. We were the content team, and we had to constantly work with the designer team. So the designers on that's sitting very close to me, they talk to me very often. And then it makes all of the kind of the awkward or intense, a little bit more intense work conversations easier to handle. And you see how each other work, and you share your struggles, you share what you enjoy or hate about your job. It's not long conversations. It's like quick little chit chats or banters, or we just like, hey, do you want to go get coffee? We go to the pantry and get coffee, that little walk back and forth, and that creates the sense of a type of connection to a point where, like, I had a little designer community around me, and it helped me with my job with my team. But then at the same time, it was really hard for me to relate to connect to this other manager person who I never had a conversation with till the day I left my job. And he was the kind of the overall manager for the entire product design team. And I caught him on a way to work one day. And I know he was a very introvert person. And, you know, well, you know me, and our listeners know me. If I want this done, I think it's important for the team to work together. Mm-hmm. I stop him on his way to work, and I apparently scare him out of his mind. And that 3 minutes walk from the train station to from the subway station to the office building, I imagine is probably the one of the top three most uncomfortable moments of his life, where I'm like, hey, we should do this. I think the designer team and the content designer team should do this design together. What do you think? Prior to that, we had never had a conversation faced like 101. And then he just smiles awkwardly, and then he doesn't say much. And when he when we go into the office building, he just dashes to his seat. Wow. And and then so I know that it's his personality, and he's a great, great designer. But I think if he could help us get to know each other a little better, and I think they're doing that now from what I know from talking to my colleagues that are still at the company, which helped a lot. So this is definitely super, super important.
Okay. So one of the things we're talking about, right, for people who are being micromanaged, just they don't know what to do because they're scared to do anything.
Or they're frustrated.
Right. Or they're like constantly being told what to do. So instead of waiting for your boss to tell you what to do or what you've done wrong, go to leadership often. Sit down with, say, hey, I need 5 minutes right now, or I need 10 minutes right now. Sit down with them and propose, these are the things I might be doing. Which one I could do it this way, I could do it that way. So you're giving your leader options of what you've thought and say, which one of these ways would you prefer? Or is there a different way you want to go? Then they usually will say, oh, I like this idea, maybe. And then when you go do that, they'll leave you alone because you've already taken care of what am I going to be doing for the rest of the day. And then you can present that to them later, and it's going to need less feedback because you've already taken their feedback. So in a way, you're kind of preempting your micromanagey boss or leader. And I've done this in lots of jobs. Yeah. I'm not saying anything about any particular person, but this is a really good way to let them know that you care about what they think, and that being proactive is sort of managing the manager a little bit. And that means helping them, you know, give you the vision that they have and giving them the options to you, the best options you have, so that they can understand what way that they can go. And then they're much, much less likely to come and bother you because they already know, oh, okay, they're working on this. So they're good. I'll go bother this other person.
it's almost kind of like in a relationship, you know, with your manager, and your manager wants the same result of what you're doing, but the manager wants you to do it exactly the way he wants to. doing. You just got to find a way to let the person know that, hey, I can do it my own way and we can achieve the same results. And then at the end of the day, we're still comrades in the same, what's the word?
I don't know which way you want to go. Society, community.
you know the thing that you're hiding in when you're in war.
Army tank? Not a hole in the ground?
Something like a bunker. That. A bunker, yes.
Okay. I don't know much about war. Okay, next one is mismatch of values. So this is, again, top six reasons that people burn out. Mismatch of values.
Yeah.
So I think that means with your coworkers, maybe what they're going for, what you're going for are completely different things.
Yeah.
So I guess that's time for a weekly 30-minute one-on-one.
Yeah.
Because you need to get your values together in order to make sure that everyone is achieving the goal that should be achieved by that company or institution.
Yeah. In my opinion. I think it also, there's another scenario, I think from the look of this phrase of mismatch of values, you also will feel like, why am I on the same team with these other people? Whether it's from a advantage perspective or disadvantage perspective, you could think like, I'm not good enough. Everybody else is super professional. They all come from, a very specific background, and I am someone who started late. Or it could be completely the other side of the spectrum, where you think, I deserve this job so much more than other people, and why are they on the same team? That is why there's a very strict policy, you know, about not discussing your salaries. Because I imagine if salary is a topic that's open for discussion, then
it depends on the company.
I don't know any company that allows their employees to discuss that.
I don't know any company that's ever asked me not to, except one. One company I've ever worked for had it in my contract. No other companies had it in their contract. So if they're not telling me, I don't have
to. You're going to discuss it.
I'm not going to. I actually don't talk with my coworkers on that level. My finances are not really a topic for discussion.
I'm not going to ask either.
Yeah. But, you know, the next one, and it's on what you're talking about, is unfairness. So the topic that you're talking about, unfairness, you know, I think that that is affecting a lot of people as well. And, you know, I think it's especially important for older people to understand that young people bring a lot of value, because I think a lot of older people who've been in the same position for a very long time sometimes see new young people who have very specialized skills come on and make the same as them. And I think that can make them feel jealous and feel that it's unfair. And when in reality, the reason that that person is being brought in is because no one else can do what they can do.
I mean, this is something that we think we can do or think we can handle, but you don't know how.
You know, I think that's, you know, you and I have also talked in other shows about constantly bringing on new skills into your repertoire and ongoing career development.
Yeah.
I think ongoing career development is really important because, you know, right now, for example, if people are not learning how to use a suite of AI tools, in 5 years, their skill set will be largely irrelevant unless they have a very niche kind of way approach to work, because that is what everyone is doing.
Yeah. Or you're just not unhappy with where you are, and this is kind of a backup plan, and you're doing that saying that I want to be better at my job, and it's really like, oh, this is just preparing me for a new job just in case I want to leave.
Right. Yeah, I guess that's true. Yeah, a lot. Developing your skills can be a good way to jump ship and find another institution or completely different career path. Yeah, because, you know, I was teaching and then I got into media, and I just jumped into media without having a lot of the skills requisite to do that. And I was just like, I can't swim in this water. The water is too deep.
Well, you're swimming very well now.
Well, I had to learn to swim in the deep end. So yeah, that was,
I think, you know, yeah, I think Jason's story is it's pretty inspiring. I'm not trying to, you know, hype Jason up, but I'm just saying, if you look at Jason's transition, there's one thing that you can always do if you're feeling like you're having a burnout at your current job. It's always good to take a moment and stop just to investigate or just to reflect on your current skill sets and what you like and what you don't like and what you have learned without you constantly realizing, and think about how transferable or interpretable these skills are, just in case you may give yourself a new idea and say, hey, yeah, I've been teaching, but the communication I have to daily apply, the research capabilities, the presentation delivery capabilities that I have to do it on a daily basis. And just because I do it repetitively doesn't mean that they're not important, because they might not seem as important in this job. But hey, in hindsight, I am pretty good at this. And maybe I can apply these skill sets to a new job that is not related to teaching, where these skill sets are highly, highly valued. And that's where Jason is.
Well, I mean, I'm also planning on, when I retire, switching back to teaching. So when I hit 60 and age of retirement in China or whatever, I was thinking about going to teach at university. So kind of switching back to my old career path as a way of retiring, because, you know, it's fun. It's fun to teach people.
Teach older students, not younger students.
So back to burnout. Obviously, you know, it can affect people in a lot of different ways, and people actually become, you know, this is interesting because we've been talking about working from home and people switching back, and increasingly companies are like, come back to work, or they're also like, work some from the office, work some from home. So I think in some ways, a lot of companies have already been mitigating like burnout, because working from home can be less stressful. For me, when I was working remotely, when I was working from home during the pandemic, I found that more stressful. Because I was in a leadership position and I had English teachers who were spread out all over the world, and I was waking up at 3 a.m. to take calls.
Oh, that's tough.
Waking up to messages from different continents. I really wanted out of that. I was like, whatever I can do for this to end, it's going to be inevitable. And then like either they're going to all like, we're all going to go back to the office, or I'm going to leave this job. I hated it. So I think for some people, working from home is a nightmare. I kind of like, go to work, you're at work, right? Then you leave work, you're not at work. And I kind of like the French system where it's literally illegal to message you when you're not at work.
Oh my God.
I really love that, because, you know, in some jobs, you know, obviously you need to be available. You're a neurosurgeon, right? Okay.
True. It's life and death.
Critical case. You need to come in. This person's going to die without you. Like, okay. Yeah. But the rest of us who office workers, like, no,
you know,
we don't need to be available on Saturday.
Yeah. I think with technology, especially nowadays with AI and everything, I think, you know, in the future, we can probably have AI study how you respond to certain kind of mundane requests or questions from people from other teams, even if you're managing a global team. But nowadays, right now, you know, as of now, as we're speaking, we don't have that yet, but there are currently available technologies that could help, like, you know, applications that do help you turn off after work, but they can't just say, you know what, this communication app is going to shut off all of your messages after 6 p.m. and you will not be disturbed. So they have to have a kind of a backup plan in place, which is, if people, let's say, buzz you, or they say this is urgent, if you get an urgent message, you'll still get notifications on your devices that people want to reach you. So what happens is, like in my old work, that's the same thing. You can, they do help you. If you say after 6 p.m., it's the end of my workday, I don't respond to messages, you can do that. And then it does stop sending you or giving you notifications. You can check the messages the next morning, but people buzz you. And there are options of buzzing you on the app, buzzing you within the app and send you a text message, and then buzz you within the app and then give you a phone call. And it just becomes so much more annoying when I get phone calls after work. And then people are like, this is very, very urgent. Yes, I know you're off work, but I have to contact you. And it's not that urgent.
I was working for another major international corporation a few years ago. And one thing I thought was really interesting is they transitioned from, that used to be you would email someone and would say, oh, I'm sorry, I'm on vacation, I'll answer your email when I got back. But this major international company, and I'm talking one of the top 10 Fortune 500 companies in the world, they changed their policy globally. This is not just in America. This is in China, too. This is everywhere. Yeah. That if you emailed someone and they were on vacation or their day off, it would automatically send this back. I'm sorry, I'm on vacation, blah, blah, blah. If you need help, contact, and it would give a different person. And then it was impossible to send an email to that person. So that when they got back from their vacation, their email inbox would be the same level as when they left. Because this company had decided it was not fair for people who went on vacation to an email full of tasks that they needed to
catch
up on.
That is such a great mechanism. Because I remember I was, for the 2 years I was working at the company, I didn't take any long breaks. But even if when I just take like a 3 days off, when I come back, I just feel like I'm just sitting in my sitting in front of my desk. I'm like, why did I take the 3 days off? Oh my God.
Yeah. When you go on a break, you shouldn't have your work just becoming extreme for when either before you leave or when you come out. A break should be a break. Yeah. You shouldn't have to like earn it in addition to having earned it. Yeah. So, you know, making it so that tasks don't just keep piling up on you while you're on your break allows you to enjoy your weekend Thailand with your, you know,
yeah. And then the more more you know it, the more it destroys your vacation. The more you don't want to do it. Like, and then because you're looking at this giant monster, and you know that the longer that you're away from work, the bigger the monster and the scarier the monster is going to be. And then you're just like, you know what? I'll just take one day off because I can't take that 3 days, 5 days, and then like staying at the company until 11 p.m. for 3 days just to catch up.
Well, I guess my question for you in the context of the bridge and our show, before we go on to some of the ways we can ease, you know, because we've mostly been focusing on what causes burnout, but ways we can ease burnout is, what is the, because you've worked in the United States. In the United States, I just say a few things. Now, legally, we are not entitled to maternity leave, paternity leave. Legally, we're not entitled to vacation, to paid days off, and all this other stuff. It doesn't exist for us. But practically, for anyone who's made it out of the service industry and is like in a corporate kind of job, those people, and I guess some service industry jobs like Starbucks and stuff like that, they do have time off and they have medical and they have. So in practice, a lot of the companies provide the things that the government doesn't mandate. So there are a lot of people who do have maternity leave and vacation time and all that stuff. We are able to avoid burnout for people who are in a certain category of the middle class and higher. The people in the lower end of the spectrum, unfortunately, in the United States, do not have these levers. So if they get sick,
that's true.
They don't get pay. And maybe they're, you know, it could be worse than that. If they lose their job owing to a debilitating disease, they may be in dire straits. And so it's terrible. I was curious, in China, are there like rules mandating vacation time, paid leave? What does that look like?
That is all written into labor law. Like, you're not allowed to just not give people days off. And so when you look at job applications, or job posts, even if it's a waiter position, because I do have people around me that manage restaurants or clubs or whatever, and then in our idea, you know, that's kind of the service industry we're talking about. But even that, they always say, oh, okay, you work 6 days and one day off, and then how many paid leaves you will have. And then the more service natured job it is, the more clear they write it. The ones that are not clear are actually much higher paying jobs, and they will say compensations are, you know, we'll discuss compensations in person, and everything's kind of like, you know, to your level of proficiency and experience. But everything is it, and if you, even if in the on the off chance that your employer is trying to go through the loopholes of law and regulations, if you bring this to arbitration, then it's almost certain that it'll always rule in favor of the employees. So it's very, very, it's very, what are you thinking, Jason?
I'm cushy. I was just,
So that's why, and I mean, unless you met people that are just in nature horrible human beings, which there aren't, and I've personally encountered these people. Most of the time, if your employer is not treating you fairly, then there is always a very easy way to reach out for help, because according to laws and regulations, they need to give you the time off that you deserve, and you can't just work people to no end and just, you know, burn them out.
Well, yeah, wow. Okay, well, you know, I think I have worked in a variety of businesses here in China, and I've seen that it goes a lot of different ways for a lot of different people. And, you know, I earlier mentioned people, you know, come in late or like leave early or take long breaks or sleep at the job. Honestly, I think those things are necessary for a lot of people a lot of the time. And I know that my biology is different from other people's biology. Mm. For example, I like to wake up early, but I'm in bed at 8 and people don't understand. People are like, what's wrong with you, Jason?
Oh, God. 8 is a little, if you say 10, I said that's very healthy. 8, I'm like, I can't imagine that. 8 p.m., I'm still at dinner.
It shocked me too, because I used to stay up until 2, like probably like you. But yeah. I had a friend who was he's literally suffers from narcolepsy. It's not like a joke for him. He's actually crashed cars because he's fallen asleep.
Oh, my God.
So he told me, and this was, I don't know, 15, 20 years ago when we were both fairly young men. Mm. He told me he went to bed at 9 and he couldn't stay up later than that, or he put people's lives at risk.
Wow.
And I was like, what? So that shocked me. But, you know, I've recently, in the last couple of years, changed my lifestyle a lot. Mm. And I find going to bed makes me happier because I get up early, yeah, you know, maybe 6-ish. Yeah. It varies. Sometimes it's 6:30, sometimes it's 5:30. Or sometimes I sleep in all the way to 7 and get like a nice 10, 11 hours.
Listen to this. I sleep until 7. Oh, my God.
No, but when you go to bed at 8 and you sleep until 7, that is 11 hours of sleep. So
that is true. That is true. Yeah. But I will say,
it's an enormous
I will say, when you wake up earlier in the day, on the off chance that I woke up early on during the day, it did make me feel like I was doing so much more. I had so many more hours in a day that I could manage, I could use. And that felt great. I just didn't know how long I could hold on to waking up early every day to enjoy that kind of sense of like extra earning of the hours in a day.
Well, I met some older, you know, I like to spend my time with people who are older and more successful than me. I've learned that in my life that I prefer people who have more wisdom than I. Those are the people I want to be around me. Mm. People who are more successful, who've done more than me. So I learned a lot from one of my former bosses in a major company, a different major company. And this was when our company was liquidated. Mm. Our branch of the company was liquidated. We were all losing our positions and whatever and all that junk. And we had a last kind of dinner among a bunch of middle managers and this leader. And this leader said that he woke up at 5 every day. Mm. And he called it the 5 a.m. club. That's what he said.
Oh, my
and
God.
And it was really and he was started talking about how he scheduled his day. He'd wake up, go to the gym, come home, shower, start doing his job at home before he went into work. And then he knew everything that was going on in every department before everyone even like woke up. And so this gave him an edge. And that's what he attributed becoming the leader of our company. Mm. And basically the China branch of our company.
Yeah.
He became the leader of this. And so he had thousands of reports in various forms, you know, direct, indirect, all kinds of stuff. He attributed getting up, being part of this 5 a.m. club to his life success. Mm. And so I thought, well, okay, you know, this, I respect this guy. It seems like a good idea. And I couldn't obviously just the next day get up at 5. That's crazy, like for normal people. Yeah. So I slowly started moving towards in that direction. And I feel like it works for me.
I saw this video of these KOLs in Hong Kong. They went to visit the gym at 5:30. Like they got to the gym at 5:30 in the morning. And when they got there, it was already kind of half full. And
wow.
It's a big gym.
What city is this?
It's Hong Kong. It's in central in Hong Kong, you know, the very important financial area.
And note to self, do not move to Hong Kong. Because I like to go to the gym at 6 a.m. because no one's there.
No, it's oh my God. It's half full. And then he talked to the people that are at the gym in that hour, and they are all very, very successful people, basically, you know, higher management or startup owners. And their reason is all the same, that they need this extra hours to just keep their body healthy because they have a lot of work to manage. And also this doesn't get in the way of them working with other people. Like we just said, if you work with a global team and when you're in Asian hours, you probably need to start talking to people around 6 or 7 because of time difference, like people in the United States or people, you know. And so this really sets them on a very, very regular schedule. According to them, like you just said, Jason, this gives them a very good energy level. I've yet to test that For myself, maybe I'll never find out whether it's true. I'll just believe these people because they're successful. But it is kind of true that if the higher, the further along in the career you are, it seems like a lot more people try to stick to this like morning workout routine or schedule, and it helps them a lot.
Well, I think it's also, I mean, just really quick before we move forward, I think it's also a really good idea to exercise before anything else, because then it's like,
yeah,
that's out of the way. You don't have to think about it. You don't have to feel stressed about it. Will I have time for it? Will I have time for my, you know, 1 hour walk, this whatever. If you just do it in the morning, then it's done, and you don't have the rest of the day. You could just be like, ah, that's done. So that's always nice to get, you know, things done. I want to talk about a couple other things here. So this is from the AMA, and it is to ease physician burnout, boost staff. It has. So I just wanted to kind of extrapolate this for other things. It says to ease physician burnout, boost staff training. And it goes on to talk about basically a few things. Get the team more capable to support the people who are doing enormous amounts of work. Physicians that have specialized knowledge, and so they're required for everything that's going on all the time.
Yeah.
And so in order to make their job easier, give all the people around them the tools they need to take tasks away from the physicians. So
yeah.
I think that's important in all kinds of functions and jobs. So I don't think it's, oh, your staff is burnt out, make them take a training. That doesn't make any sense. But if you're if specific parts of your staff are burnt out, maybe they're doing more and other people are doing less, and some of those tasks could be redistributed to other people. And that's an important thing to keep in mind. Also, you know, that reminds me of individuals. If you are doing too much, say no. You know, it's okay to say no, like say, wow, you know, I'm doing this and this and this and this. You want me to do that? No, I don't have time to do that. And that's important, because that brings us to another thing, which is in the same article. And it says address staffing shortages, because if you can't finish your job by the time you're supposed to be going home, then you're doing more than one person's job.
Yeah. But the sad thing is, in a lot of corporate situations, when this comes up, most of the time the management will just say, well, you could improve your efficiency. You could be more efficient at work. And that's why you're not going home on time, which is very sad. And I don't think anyone should listen to that unless you really feel like you're wasting time watching YouTube videos or doing, you know, on being on TikTok all day at work. Then, yeah, look into yourself. But most of the time, people are really putting their efforts into their job. And then if middle management comes to you with this kind of comments, I would say that's kind of a workplace manipulation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I completely agree. We also get those leaders who say, oh, yeah, you can say no, or you can choose, you know, try it. We'll try to lighten your load.
Yeah.
But then sometimes those same people are still adding to your load.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, people, the middle managers need to be keenly aware. This is something that's in corporate speak can be called the everything sandwich. You've had this speech. Yeah. I've been in a couple trainings where they talked about the everything sandwich. So a company starts off and they imagine a role and they say, this is what's going to be in that role. And so it's got like pickles and onions and meat and mayonnaise and bread, right?
Yeah.
Done. This is this sandwich, whatever. They're like, you know what? What would be good in this sandwich? And so they keep adding to the sandwich. Oh, we're going to add some pineapple. That's burgers great with pineapple. Oh, you know what's really popular with burgers right now? Jalapenos. So they keep adding to the sandwich until it's so full of just so much different garbage that eventually it's not palatable because it's just got everything. And that's the same as roles. If a person at work has a particular role, but then leadership keeps imagining new things to give them to do, eventually they're doing too much. And if they're going to, this is the idea that was proposed at the end of these kinds of trainings.
Yeah.
If you're going to add something to someone's role, take something else out.
Exactly. And I it's just speaking of, and it reminds me of something that I wish my old company could have done for me. I wish we had more of an IT support than we did. So what we did was, because I was working as the project manager of the whole team, so there's a lot of mundane work where requests come in, because we're kind of my team is kind of like a what we call a central platform service team that works with different designers and development teams. And then people have to come up with requests. And so on a high day, I would get maybe 30, 40 requests that I have to distribute or assign to different content designers on my team. And that's just a lot of manual work. And just so that we can keep track and the content designers could see what requests they have or what are the new things that they have to work on. And that should be able to To be completed by some sort of project management software or whatever technology. And instead of having that technology or having options, we had to go because it was just taking too much of my time where I actually need to do stakeholder management. What we did was that we had to come up with ways of automating that process. We have to come up with proposals of what to do and what not to do. And we have to run pilots and stuff. So the idea, the decision of me trying to take the workload off my work was completely self-initiated. It has to be self-researched and self-executed, and actually made my work during that time period even worse. So I wish we could just have like, hey, here are the ways. Like we could go to like an IT consultant for the overall big team and just be like, hey, is there any way that I could automate this process without spending like a month, quote unquote, developing this new system?
Listening to The Bridge.
You know, it's interesting because we both, you know, I have most of my career experience in the United States and some in China, and you have most of your career experience in China, but some in the United States, is that the issues that we're talking about affect everyone everywhere. And that's definitely something that we have in common, that we as a global community are dealing with the same corporate issues, the same company issues, the same kind of community issues in our work everywhere.
Absolutely.
In a few weeks, we're going to talk about a different topic that's related, the 4-day work week. And so I think that some countries and some companies that are global even are starting to tackle a new kind of way of approaching work. But I want to ask you, because you, even before you kind of went out on your own and started your own independent kind of company, you were doing your full-time job plus a bunch of side hustles. And, you know, was that helping or hurting you in terms of working too much or feeling satisfied? How did that affect you in terms of burnout? How would you define?
What a good question. What a good question. I think it was very important for me that I set this very blurry boundary for myself when I was at this full-time job, and I was telling myself, okay, I have to leave at 8:30. I have to go to this thing because I wanted to do it. It makes me feel good. It changes where my mind was. I would shift from the work mode to comedy mode, and it helped me. But at the same time, it also really, really reinforced the idea that I don't have enough time for myself. Because I have, you know, I do comedy, I want to go dance, and then I do trivia with my friends. And these are all things that bring me joy. And the things that bring me joy are being sacrificed because I also want to do a good job at my work. And there's just way too much, and I had to sacrifice that. And I just felt like, and then when I do have time to go to, for example, my dance class, I would look very, very defeated because I was like, oh, I wish I could come here more, but this is the only time I could have. And I couldn't sign up for any continuous courses or workshops because I just couldn't guarantee coming from work at a set hour of a day. And so in a way, it really helped with my job because I could recharge from these activities. On the other hand, it did kind of accelerate my decision of leaving. I want to go to more film festivals. I want to be able to travel. I don't want to go to a Celsius festival thinking, oh, I would come back to work and you know, trying to pay off my quote unquote holiday debt.
You know, I have my own feelings about this, and you actually bring up a really interesting point because you say going to a dance class is recharging for you. And I think this is really important because different people have different ideas of what recharges them. And the cliche that everyone I think knows is going to the party, right? Going to a party for some people is recharging them. And for other people like me, going to a party is draining the battery.
Yeah.
I go to a party and I'm waiting. When is it the appropriate time for me to make my exit where people are not going to judge me for leaving too early?
Yeah.
And then I get home and I'm like, thank God that's over.
Yeah. Oh, speaking on that topic, just very quickly, you know, a lot of people are taking the MBTI personality
test
nowadays. And there are quite some surprising results from people that you think are extrovert or introverts. And you say, oh, this person's very talkative and this person always has a high energy level. And therefore, this person must be an extrovert, like an E person. But the real thing that sets E people from I people apart is exactly what you said, whether you get energy or whether social events drains your energy at the end of the day. And then to a lot of people's surprise, I am an I person. Can you believe that, Jason?
Me too.
Right. So like it's the same thing. Like I do go to social occasions. I do go to social events because that for me, that's a change of mentality. It's change of emotion, but it's the change that matters. It's not the actual event, because at the end of a social event, I usually feel like, okay, I need to be by myself for a little bit. And I'll be like, okay, I'll get all of the talking. I'll get all of the kind of interaction with other human beings. But after that, I need to be by myself. And that's why when I'm at work, yes, I'm very communicative. And that's the nature of my job as well. But when my coworkers go, hey, do you want to have lunch together? I'm like, no, I need to have lunch by myself.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You're listening to The Bridge.
But actually, I don't really like going out a lot. And I do have a lot of friends. I like them, but I don't want to spend as much time as I do with them.
Ouch,
but
Jason.
Part of that is because I'm trying to accomplish a lot of things. I do work on my days off almost all day. But I love the difference between the work that I give myself, self-directed work, instead of going to work and doing the work that needs to be done for another institution. So I find that fulfilling because I'm doing it autonomously by myself, self-directing, choosing creatively. I'm accountable to me. Mm. I love that. But I wanted to add one thing. When I was a kid, we're always looking for wisdom from other people. And oftentimes it can come from people who are our peers. I was about 18 and I had a friend who was about 18. His name was Brian Darner. He lives in California. Yeah. You know, I mean, he probably never hear this, but he said to me and one of my friends, and we were at the time, that, you know, it's okay to take downtime, like to watch television, in his opinion, in his assessment, because that if that's part of how you recharge, then that's what you should do. And he feels that some people get judgy about other people watching movies or, but, you know, I feel it's necessary too. And I felt very relieved at 18 to hear this from another person. You know, I was like, wow, okay, yeah, I feel that way too. I feel that taking time off is part of work because you're essentially getting yourself mentally fit enough to go back to work and be effective at it. So I
think that's true.
The one thing, you know, you and I are probably not great examples for how to avoid burnout. So I think
we just said bye-bye.
I think for a lot of our listeners, you know, if you need more time to, you know, watch, I don't know, whatever programs are popular on Netflix, let's just say that, you know, kind of cover all kind of thing. If you need time to watch Netflix a few times a week, watch Netflix a few times a week without letting people judge you. I also want to say on the other side of it, if all you do is go home and play video games, maybe,
do something else.
Maybe you should find one or two other hobbies to, you know, add to that variety.
Exactly. Don't be too self-indulging in things that you do. I would say, even though it might not feel like it's the right thing to do, try to diversify or try to give yourself a break, because you may think that, oh my God, I really want to go home and just watch like 10 episodes of this TV series because work is so demanding and I'm reaching, you know, I'm pushing in on my burnout. But if you really did go home and watch 10 episodes of this TV show, at the end of it, you're going to be exhausted as well.
Yeah. I have an article here, and I think it covers a couple of things that are important. And these are cliche things that everyone knows. So these are ESGClarity.com, avoiding burnout while working. It says specifically in sustainability, but I think it means, you know, you can take these and talk about everything. One is that be patient.
Mm.
So sometimes when, you know, you're in work environment and you've got to get a new project and you're like, oh gosh, this is a whole new thing. And you're already working on a project. It can feel frustrating. Take a moment to breathe.
Always.
and you know, give yourself time to process that, how you're going to fit this new thing into your schedule or whatever. Don't let yourself flip out.
Yeah.
But another thing is eat well, which brings another thing.
Yes.
Exercise. You know, so both eating. Don't eat pizza or McDonald's all the time, guys. That's not. You are going to give yourself biological reasons, you know,
to be more stressed out. Yeah.
Yeah. You're going to be stressed out. Your body's going to be stressed. And then when you're at work, you're going to be stressed. So you need to eat healthy food. But another thing is, you know, Alex goes to dance class. Mm. I like to take 2-hour walks, you know, a few times a week. Like I do watch TV. I watch Star Trek. I watch, you know, all kinds of just junk 1990s stuff, Netflix garbage sometimes. But I also go out and exercise. Yeah. In addition to all, you know, that's important. If you are a couch potato and you've been sitting on the couch for the last month, you're going to feel like crap.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's nothing. Yeah.
Take a quick morning walk and, you know, before you go to work. It doesn't have to be 2 hours. It doesn't have to be like 5 kilometers. Do a walk for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And trust me, it's going to bring you something that you've been missing, and that'll give you a little bit of a smile, hopefully, on your face.
And this one is, I guess, a last piece of advice, and it's also a question for Alex, and it's get good sleep. Alex, are you getting enough sleep?
I don't. And I'll tell you from my experience at my old job, which is a full-time corporate job, and my new job where work is more sporadic, having good sleep is so essential to how you feel during the day, how you interact with people, and all of this is going to accumulate. And, you know, if you're constantly not sleeping well, because I just want to watch TikTok for an extra 2 hours in bed and I couldn't put my phone down, then you'll have a bad night's sleep, and then the next day you're not going to feel well, and you're going to have a kind of a very unhealthy interaction with people around you. And if that goes on for a couple of days, you are going to have a horrible week, and that will lead to a horrible month, and you're really going to hate yourself, and you're going to put yourself in this bad cycle. And if you want to break out of it, try to put yourself in a exercise some of these seemingly ridiculous sleep tips that you could find on Douyin, on TikTok, on whatever platform that you use, and try them out, and you will be surprised. I had a really bad couple of days last week where I was going to bed at 3 or 4 in the morning, and then one day during the day, the whole day, there was not even a second where I felt like I was in. Like I was healthy. I felt like I was going to collapse the whole day, but I had to keep holding on. And then at the end of the day, I had to come home and do a power nap. And then during the power nap, I woke up a couple of times, and it was scary because when I woke up, I didn't know what was reality, what was my dream.
Wow!
And that you don't want to be there. I hope this year, the rest of the year, I don't have to experience that again. So very important to have a good sleep.
Yeah. Just let's recap a couple things. You know, be patient. Try to eat healthy. Try to get enough sleep.
Mm.
I think it's 2.5 hours of some kind of exercise. That could just be walking. Is supposed to be what most people are supposed to be getting as a minimum per week.
Yeah. If you put it on every day, then that's like what? Not even half an hour every day.
Take time to do stuff that's not a useful use of your time. So like, you know, whether that's watching Seinfeld or whatever it is, you know, Friends.
Go to trivia.
For Chinese people, it's watching Friends, right? So like,
yeah.
Whatever it is that, you know, you don't always have to be productive all the time. But also, like Alex does so well, you know, find other things, the interesting things to do and add to your hobbies, add to your skills. All these things are going to help you at work. And also, I think a really important thing that everyone needs to learn, and I think this is a lot more older people are better at doing this, say no, because sometimes it is too much. Maybe sometimes you need to coach your leadership on that you don't have time, that if you they want the other tasks that you're doing to be done effectively and well, that you need time to do them well.
Yeah, I think younger employees are actually getting better at saying no, or maybe that's just part of their generation. But I've seen people at work that are very reasonable when they say, I don't want to do this extra task that you're giving me because of these 1, 2, 3, 4 points. And that's very, very admirable. I applaud you.
You know, and I do think this is really interesting because someone, you know, I want to point this out at the end again, is that, you know, these things are true in China, they're true in the United States. So I'm imagining they're pretty much true everywhere. This is something that our global community is dealing with, and especially in the last few years when creative possibilities have opened up, reimagining how we work is kind of a global affair right now.
Mm.
That is all the time we have. So thank you so much for your time, Alex. If you would like to add to this conversation, question us, tell us why we're wrong, please, we'd love to hear it. We'll read your comments on the air. Email us at welovethebridge@gmail.com. Thank you for your time, listeners. Thank you for your time, Alex.
Thank you, Jason. and let's hope for a burnout-free 2024, everybody.